What's up, brothers and sisters? This episode is brought to you by Field Scum Clothing. I really encourage you to go check out their dope hats, hoodies, and shirts. You can find them on Instagram and at fieldscumclothing.com. Be safe.
So with that being said, Kevin, man, we just kind of a brief intro, man. Book number, what local you're from, and just how you found yourself becoming an iron worker.
So my book number is 1478360. And I'm a local one iron worker out of Chicago. I got into iron working kind of a strange route. I went to college first as a swimmer. I was a full ride scholar athlete. And then while I was in school, the market was doing pretty shitty at that time. Most of my friends that were graduating weren't getting jobs. And a family friend who was a career iron worker at that time insisted that I took the test because we were always kind of the kids in the neighborhood growing up doing like sketchy shit, climbing things you really shouldn't be as kids. And he remembered that and was like, hey, we have the test coming up, you know, might as well take it as a backup. And then a few years went by and I got a call from the local. They were like, do you still want to be a local one iron worker? And I actually said no at first because I was working for like a buddy's dad making, you know, okay money. And then the guy who made me take the test called me and was like, you're a fucking idiot. Like, you need to call back the union immediately and apologize. So, I started the next day after that call, an apology.
But no kidding, man.
Yeah.
Being local one, it's obviously pretty prestigious and all that, man. And what I've heard is it could be pretty difficult to actually get into local one apprenticeship, man. So you are obviously one of the dudes that got in, man. So can you tell us what an apprenticeship in Chicago looks like?
So it's a 3-year, 6,000 working hour apprenticeship. And because we're a dual union, so we have both rod busting and structural side of it. It's a little bit more extensive in those 3 years where you have to really learn, you know, a multitude of courses and certifications in that time. So your first year, you know, is kind of just your structural. You're reinforcing, knots, rigging, you know, you're kind of your basics. And then as you progress through your years, you get your pay raises, you know, every 6 months. Like, I think it's pretty standard for most locals. You start to learn harder and harder things, you know, more and more difficult courses until finally your final year is when you start to take on like your welding classes and all your structural 1.1, 1.8, stick and wire, all that stuff. But it's a great program. You know, it shows you a lot. I think it's really important to people's careers to learn proper ways and different ways in order to make things happen in the field.
Hell yeah, man. What type of scope did you find yourself doing right off the bat, Kevin?
So I went into the rod patch first for probably about 6 months. And like I said, I was working for a buddy's dad. I was doing construction work down in like central Illinois near like Peoria, basically quality control work. But I was making about 60 grand a year. And I drug up on that to come into local one. And I was busting rods, like working for some guys that weren't like the greatest guys to be learning from looking back on it, you know. But at the time, you don't know any better. It's your first day. Like my very first day of work, it was me dragging by myself number 9 40-foot bars like through the dirt, because you can't, I mean, even if you get to the center of it, it's still gonna hit the fucking ground on both sides. So I drug 220 of those, probably 200 yards, right? End of the day comes around, guy only used about half of them. He's like, all right, bring them back. And like, that was my first day, and I was like, man, I don't know if this is pretty rough. It got better, you know. It was like that first week, the tester week, you know.
But,
so straight into rods, and then it wasn't about 6 months later, I got laid off from that company, and I went straight into structural and pretty much been there ever since.
Oh yeah, man. So once you got into the structural side, were you a connector? Were you a decker, welder? Like, what did you find yourself doing on the structural side?
Once I found out about connecting, that was all I wanted to do. Yeah. Like, I used to tell my first structural foreman, like, put me up in the air. I want to be a sky cowboy. Like, this punkin' shit ain't for me, you know? And how I actually got my first nickname was from that job. I was up connecting. was out of bolts, like last piece before coffee type situation. Someone throw me a bolt so we can just like cut it loose and get out of here, right?
Yep.
And I get a bolt thrown up at me and it comes up super short, like nowhere near me. And I look down at the guy and I'm like, hey, hit me in the teeth. And he's like, all right, kid. And he slings this thing at me. I put my hand up and I miss the bolt. Hits me right in the fucking teeth. Chip my tooth.
Damn.
They call me Cowboy Chip was my first
Cowboy
nickname.
Chip. Yeah, that's actually a killer nickname, dude. I like that. Yeah, I like that. So yeah, connecting obviously is, you know, the cream of the crop, right? That's like what everybody wants to do and shit, Kevin. So like what did you like about it though, other than being up in the air, man? Because that's just what we do as ironworkers. But what did you like about connecting?
More of the brotherhood of it. Like you and your partner are like super tied in. Like, you know, the guys I've been connecting with now, it's been a long time. So it's like, I know every single move they make. You almost don't even need to really talk. You do for the reassurance. But, and then it's like, it's way more athletic. I was an athlete in college. So for me to make that transfer of like, let's go fucking get it. Like, let's go. Like, that's what I like about that. It's, you know, how I want to throw up as many pieces as I can today or run this job out of iron and get the fuck out of here. Like,
just, you know, especially being in Chicago, man, you guys build shit that we don't see it out, obviously, in the West. I mean, like 100-story buildings and even taller than that, man. What's it like to like work up at those types of heights, man? Because at some point, if you fall, you're going to die. It doesn't matter if you're 1,000 feet up,
right?
Right. So what's it like? What's it like working on a story job of that kind of caliber?
Yeah, I don't know. I just kind of like, you just get you. I mean, the first ones are, you know, fucking mind bending for sure. Yeah, but you just kind of get used to it. And like, I'm sure if you've connected, like you kind of get. It's, I don't want to call it like a tunnel vision because that sounds complacent. And I, you know, none of us are ever I guess no one's intentionally complacent, but, you know, but you get very focused viewed, you know what I mean? Like the heights kind of don't really matter because like, you're not gonna fuck up. And like, you know, luckily today, like in today's modern world of safety and whatnot, most of these jobs down here, we have like, at least on the headers, you have, like some sort of cable system running through where you can stay tied off for the majority of it if you need it, or if you have a beam skate as a secondary. Like there's plenty of options. But
they let you guys run subpart R out there, Kevin, where you guys can hang iron without tying off two floors?
Depends on the job, you know. Yeah. Like we always try to pull it, like most of the time. Cause like once we get up to a certain height, no one really messes with us. So it's we're good, you know. It's,
yeah. You guys use helicopters and shit to hang iron, don't you?
Those are more rare scenarios in Chicago. Like the most recent one I'm aware of that just happened was the Sears Tower antenna edition.
Okay.
But like that's, you know, like a scenario where you don't have access because it's the highest point or it's super deep into a building. For iron, it's a little bit more rare, I'd say, nowadays, because if someone's going to do like a full rehab out here, they're just going to throw like a crawler and build it out or throw a tower crane on it.
Okay.
Like the hospital we were just on, we had a huge tower crane, you know, just massive stick on this thing. So we broke it every time we went to the farthest point, but you could get stuff there.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, but the helos, I've set like a mall edition with a helicopter, like all at night, but it was just because it was like they were building on top of an existing, so the access wasn't really there. But
yeah,
it's a pain in the ass, honestly. It's just when that thing comes down, dude, it's coming down.
Like, yeah, I mean, there's like no easy at all. Give me a dog cub, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
which is kind of scary, right? When you got to put your fucking hands in there.
Yeah, definitely got to watch your pinch points on that one.
And the reason why I found you, Kevin, it's not that I'm on Instagram, obviously, but I saw a YouTube video, man, of you kind of like talking about what it's like to be a union iron worker and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
And if we could talk about a little bit about unionism, man, I know Chicago is a union town, man. You guys got agreements that were signed, you know, in the 1800s that you guys are still working off of and shit. So what's it like being a union iron worker in Chicago?
I think just union pride in general in Chicago is super high. I mean, like the Haymarket riots happened here, which is what gave us Labor Day. So you really are in like the heartland of like, you know, labor, anything. Like this is where it all started. And as an iron worker, I mean, like, I know most iron workers, probably all iron workers, you know, look at themselves as God in all locals, but like here in Chicago, especially, like we demand that shit. And like, I saw something online the other day that said iron workers have the lowest tolerance for any inconvenience. And I fucking died about it, because it's like, it's true, you know. But at the end of the day, it's like, that inconvenience for us is the difference between life and death. Like, I'm not going to go work in the rain. There's no way. Like, if I slip, that's it, dude. And like, I don't need to think like that. None of us need to think like that. And I know, like, a lot of iron workers kind of give a bad rap for just like boogieing out of the job, like real quick. But you know, it's like, without that, you start turning into a carpenter or these other unions that have given away so much. And like, they look at us and they're like, oh wow, you guys are so, you know, you guys are kind of prima donnas. And it's like, dude, we haven't given up anything. Like,
yeah,
we've held on to everything we have here for the respect of the men. Like, fuck the contractor. Fuck these guys. Like, the working man here should have the power. And I think that's how it should be everywhere. But
dude, and that's a great point, Kevin, because I've never, I guess, because I work in the Northwest, right? It rains here 9 months out of the year. So if I don't work in the rain, I'm broke. But what you said right there is that we haven't given up anything. And that is the fucking point, man, is that a lot of these locals outside of the Chicago, we've given up things, right? We've seceded things to the contractor and things like that. But that is a great point that you said that, because, you know, that is the difference about being union. When you don't give it up, once you give it up, you're not getting it back. And that's what a lot of people fail to understand.
Yeah.
Being a union iron worker in Chicago, like, what's the process of, like, do you guys, obviously you guys got an out of work list. Is it like, can you guys go find your own work there? Or is it all just like, if you guys like are like trying to find your own work, you're a piece of shit? Or is it all, you got to go to the hall every day and take a job ticket?
No, I mean, you're encouraged to make your own calls and, you know, use your connections and the guys you've met. The BAs will always show up, which is great about Chicago. If I'm making a call to look for work, like, you know, because I show up to work every day and I don't like fuck off, I'll probably have a job by tomorrow.
Okay.
Like, you know what I mean? Like they've always got a couple jobs on the back burner they're going to save for guys that like need them. But like that list is always going to get taken care of at the same time. But like, yeah, you're almost expected to be able to go do it yourself. I mean, it's not like if you need a BA, you know, when times are slow, you can definitely give them a call. But that is the nice thing about our local, is you call a BA and a BA is on your job. And under 60 minutes, a BA will show up if you need them there.
Oh, yeah. And so, but in the other part of it too, Kevin, what I've always heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, brothers, like, you guys kind of like, once you guys work together, like a raisin gang, you guys pretty much go chase the hook. You guys are going next job, always working together, right?
Yeah. Typically. The raisin gang I'm in right now, we just kind of got broken up. Like, jobs fell through for the next small ones that were supposed to get us to the big ones. We're kind of scattered a little bit, but we're just waiting for that call to get back together and go put something big together.
So what is work like in Chicago nowadays? Is there any like big jobs going on, or is there any big jobs coming up? I mean, I know that the Bears are leaving Soldier Field and possibly building something out in Arlington Heights or something. Is that right, or am I fucked up?
No, you're right on that. I don't see that going. I don't see that going in 2024. Like, there's nothing huge on the books right now. The job we just finished, Illinois Masonic Hospital up on like Lakeview, was the biggest one in the local, biggest iron, largest footprint, most iron per bay, everything. And we just wrapped that thing up probably a little bit too quick, but
yeah,
you know what I mean? But there's like, there's a little flyover going on up there too. There's a lot of work in that area, but we're not slow, but downtown isn't like booming, you know. Like, I'm working out in the suburbs on some train station right now, but
hell yeah. So have you ever actually like gone and worked up on the towers, Kevin? I think in your YouTube video you said you were on the formerly known John Hancock building. So like, what was that like taking that call, man?
Well, so I took that back in like 2018. Funny story about it, actually. I had finished up Wrigley Field for like the second year in a row. And when Wrigley goes, it's like 7-12s for like 6 months. You're fucking, you're yeah. zombie mode. Like you're completely shot. And I had just finished that up and I was like, I'm taking time off. I'm going to go, I rock climb for fun. So I just disappeared into the desert and me and my dog and my girlfriend at the time. And I kept getting calls for work. And I was like, jokingly, don't call me unless it's the Hancock. Like, unless it has a big name to it, I'm not coming back to Chicago. Like,
yeah.
Don't worry. And then, like, I was in and out of service, and I come back into, like, some small town in Utah, and I check my voicemail, and there's, like, some guy left me a voicemail about the Hancock. And I'm like, you know how ironworkers are, dude. I'm like, someone put somebody up. Like, fuck with this kid. Let's get him, you know? So I'm like, ah. So yep. I call this random number back, and I'm like, who put you up to this, dude? And the guy's like, no, my name's Pat Kruger, and I own Kruger Broadcasting Services, and I'm looking for a climber, and I heard you know rope access. Like, can you come do this? And I was like, when do you need me there? And he was like, Monday. And it was like Thursday. So I basically had to pack up all my shit and get back to Chicago. But I wasn't turning down that job.
Yeah.
For sure. But I've been up there every season since then. I've become the lead climber. So anytime there's any sort of everyone, common misconception. Well, you just said it right. You said towers, but a lot of people think they're antennas on top of the buildings. But you attach the antennas to the towers. So anytime there's one going up or coming down or like a safety climb or some shit, I have to go do it. But it's
that's what that work is, Kevin, is basically like a dismantle reinstall. Is that kind of what's
essentially? Yeah.
OK, because I remember seeing a video from not too long ago, like you guys burning and shit like, you know, ooh. Up at the top. Like what's obviously safety procedures on something like that, man. I saw that everything was all lanyard yeah. off and shit. So like, how do you really like how do you protect the public from that type of work?
Well, I didn't have anything to do with the torch work. So. Oh, yeah. Cause even I thought that was pretty mental for sure. Yeah. But I mean, again, like, what are you going to do? Like you can't, yeah. you're not going to put like a yeah. bucket underneath it. You know, it's yeah. like,
piece of slack from 1,000 feet in the air. I mean, I don't know, but
yeah, I mean, I know the area of the tower that they were cutting on, and I know it's a monopole, so it's pretty much like a trash chute in itself.
Gotcha. Know. Okay.
I'd imagine that the majority of anything that they cut that like went off probably caught the top of the building.
Gotcha.
At the tips of the towers, you're like 360 feet off the roof of the building. Yeah. So, you know how those things cool off and. So, yeah, but I mean, the thing is, though, is you are right, because like when I'm working on top of the Hancock, like Michigan Avenue is wide open. If anyone's ever been in Chicago, Michigan's like the tourist capital of Chicago right there. So you don't want to slip a bolt or something, you know, so it's yeah. everything's just very slow. It's like, you know, if you get 16 bolts stuffed in a day, you're killing it, you know, no it's shit. Like, but you know, I can't be jostling the bottom part of this piece while you're trying to stick a bolt and like rattle a nut out of your hand and it falls yeah. 1400 feet to the streets. Like, I don't like to make the news for bad reasons, you know?
Yeah. What was it like the first time you got to climb that tower, man? I'm sitting here like trying to wrap my head around something like that. I mean, I've seen the pictures and all that, man, but what's it like to actually climb up just, I just saw like little, like, it looks like little J bolts on the side, man.
Yeah. So yeah, that top tower is pretty sparse. There's not many climbing pegs up there. And as you get higher, it just gets thinner. Like there's just less and less.
Is it a movie bit? Is it a fucking flop? Flimsy? Is it flimsy? Is it?
No, it's not like, okay. It's not too bad. But like, if I get up to the top of it and I got to like crack one of those like head bolts off the top and I start getting like rhythmic on my pulling, you'll get it swaying, but yeah. you know, if just like you guys are just like kind of climbing and like taking your time, it won't move too much. They're pretty solid. I think there's some other ones in the city that I've heard are like pretty sketchy. But the first, so I was lucky actually. My first week up there, the weather wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. It was like my first day, there was like clouds from like 800 feet to like 4,000 feet. So you couldn't see 15 feet past you. So my very first climb took it all the way to the top, could barely see my partner above me or below me because you run in like a team of like 3 to 4 typically.
Yeah.
Couldn't see anybody and was like, oh man, this is kind of sketchy, you know, like, well, I didn't think that was sketchy, you know, like just the idea of what was like happening, right? Like the lack of vision, but it's good because you can't really see like the exposure on it, right? And then the next day I was like slightly less cloudy, so you could get little spots and like kind of gauge your distance off the ground. And then the third day, we were like just barely above the clouds. So there'd be days where you like hours where you'd like look down, you could see all the way to the ground. But I mean, now I don't know, after like 3 days, you're used to it. It's like, you just gotta, there's one hard move on the whole thing. If you can do that move, you could do anything on the tower. But the weird part is you got to be able to sit into a harness,
okay,
which we're not used to doing, you know, like
yeah.
It's always sitting on the beam. This, you have to like suspend yourself, let go, work hands free.
Like to get your material up there, Kevin, like when you're working at the top of the tower, are you guys using like tuggers? You guys got like some kind of pulley system, chain falls?
Yeah, it's like they call it a cat head, which is basically just like a ground ran pulley system, but you're using rope instead of like a cable because just the sheer length of it alone. Like if we got to pull something off the ground, you got to pull it through the smokestack in the middle of the building, which is a fucking trip. They're like, you got to watch it the whole time it's going, but you're talking about 100 stories of black fucking tube. And you're just like, okay. And you have like a flashlight and you lose it after 60 feet and you're like, it'll be fine. Like,
yeah, no shit. I was going to say, you have an apprentice on every floor or what?
Yeah, right. Like, what? Yeah, it's funny. Like, it's just strange work. But
so is that like you said that you they called you because you had a rope certification? Is that obviously something that you need to have? That's where you learn like different pulley systems, different knots for that kind of work.
Well, so my certification isn't really rope. Oh, it is now. Now okay. I have my. Like proper certs and for that whatnot, just because it's been so long. But back then I only had like what they called an SPI cert, a single pitch instructor, which is actually a rock climbing certification. But the transfer of that is like very similar systems. You know, it's like, I already understood the premise and the basis of it. It's just on a larger scale for material instead of people.
Yeah.
But yeah, they basically had like a composite crew of like iron workers and electricians up there before. And now we have just iron workers up there. So
hell yeah, man. Yeah. So like one of the other, like just going back into history and all that, man. And just one of the cats that always came up was John Ruccovina. He was, did you ever get to meet him or ever like be around him?
No, unfortunately I did not. But I was kind of a funny story that we're having this conversation right now. I was just up in Red Wing, Minnesota, the home of Red Wing Boots, and they have a museum there where they have a Hall of Fame, and a pair of John's boots are retired in that Hall of Fame.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, man. Dude was a rock star, man. I just kind totally. Of like, it was it just, I actually, at some point when I first started podcasting, I called Local One to just, you know, hell with it. Might as well try. You know, all I can do is say no. And he wasn't interested. I think he was just might have been sick, or because he didn't. He just passed away not too long ago, right, Kevin? Or is he still around?
I actually don't know about that.
I could have swore I saw that he passed away, but don't quote me on that. That's something that I heard, man. But those are the kind of iron workers that come out of Chicago, like. I mean, like, just for people who are listening, you know, like Frank Buchanan, you know, the general president that basically changed a lot of shit for the international, you know what I mean? And you know, George Geary, the first international organizer, man, just the shit all starts there in Chicago, which is just crazy, man. Is there like a history room or anything like that at Local One?
Oh, yeah. All through like the hall. Like where our monthly meetings take place, you can see like a lot of stuff. I think it probably could use a little updating on some stuff. I think it kind of stops in the 90s or so, but
oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, we're lucky here, man. Like to be an apprentice in Local One, like very quickly, if you meet like if we're in a booming year where we have like boomers coming in from all over the place, you very quickly see like how different it is. Even just being an apprentice in Local One, you'll see some hands come in where you're like, holy shit, dude, like, man, like, take it easy, bro. This is big iron out here. Like,
yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Just in the few trainings that I went to for work, man, I've got to be around a few Local One ironworkers like John Gallagher. He's
I love John.
Awesome.
So
stand up, dude, man. Fucking
the guy hilarious. Who got me in is John's brother, Jerry.
Really?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And I forgot your guys' recording secretary. He was in training too, because I was just in Chicago in October for training, and I forgot his name. It was John and the other cat, but really good dudes, man. Really friggin' fuck. Like John Gallagher, just looking at pictures and stuff of what he's did, man. Just he was a nut, I heard. Just hanging motherfucker, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great hand.
Hell yeah, man.
He was just connecting just a year or two ago to still. Like, I mean, still getting it. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Still getting it. Hell yeah. But getting around that half hour mark, Kevin, just kind of wanted to, you know, one of the couple questions I like to ask at the end of the podcast, man. So, you know, for somebody who's listening, as some kid or, you know, in high school that's on the fence of thinking about getting in the Ironworkers Union, what would you say to that kid?
Man, I'd say do it. Like if you're in a local like mine where you're dual sided, I mean, there's so much work in this, at least in our union, I can say without a question, there's so much work that you could find yourself falling into. You know, everyone doesn't have to start off chasing hooks and hanging big iron and, you know, like risking the biscuit. There's plenty of welding gigs I found myself on. I mean, I'd probably say I make more money welding during my career just from the sheer hours alone on it than I have connecting, just because I'll stay on a welding job for 6 or 7 months straight. But there's a spot for everybody. You know, and I think like, even if you're kind of on the fence and you don't think that it's for you, I think very quickly you can figure that out. Like, it's not going to take you long. You're not going to be 10 years into your career before you say, oh man, what have I done?
Hell yeah, man. And, then just, I always usually just give the guest a last word, Kevin, man, just to, if there's anything you want to say about ironwork in general or construction in general, man, the floor is yours.
I just feel lucky, dude, being an ironworker in general. Like, we're fucking lucky cats. I think all of us know that. And, yeah, just stay union strong, bring people in, keep this shit going.
Hell yeah, brother. With that, Kevin, I appreciate your time, brother. Thank you for coming on. And brothers and sisters, thank you for tuning in, and be safe.